Did you know that restaking is the fastest growing use case by TVL in the history of crypto? EigenLayer went from 1 billion to 14 billion in just one quarter. Are you prepared for this massive opportunity? In this episode, we're joined by Mike, co-founder and CEO of EtherFi, the most decentralized liquid restaking protocol in crypto right now, to help you better understand and wrap your heads around the restaking meta.
I mean, I think it was to help all of us because I learned a lot in this episode. But Mike talks about how EtherFi grew from 100 million to 4 billion TVL in basically a quarter. He predicts the potential yield for restaking, and it's pretty juicy, so make sure you stick around and check that one out. Mike believes that LSTs like Lido and Rocket Pool are going the direction of a fax machine, and everyone's going to move to LRTs, which is actually something I believe in as well. And then we talked all about the token of EtherFi and what the purpose of that token is and how it fits in the ecosystem. This was a juicy, juicy episode. Really good stuff here.
GMGM, welcome to Milk Road Radio, the easiest path to get smarter about crypto. I'm Jay Hamilton, joined by my co-host Kyle Reedhead, and we believe that on-chain is the next online. This is the opportunity, and we're here to guide you to capitalize on it. Before we get started on today's episode, we are hiring at Milk Road, and if you are a crypto native and you want to work at one of the most fun and exciting teams in the space, we would love to have you. Check out the links in our show notes. We're currently hiring a podcast manager and two writers, one or more on the financial analyst side and one more on the daily news aggregation side. Lots of roles, lots of opportunities. Would love to have you join our team. So check out those roles. Kai, you're also writing a pro report all about restaking that'll come out this coming Saturday. Can you tell us a little bit of alpha and tease us on that?
Yeah, look, this episode is perfect to get the understanding about restaking and to get the perspective of one of the, well, the biggest protocol in restaking, liquid restaking. And this pro report is how to capitalize on the opportunity that we're about to talk about here in this episode. So it is a perfect pro report to read after listening to this. Comes out on Saturday. It's for pro members only. So make sure you are signed up to pro so you can get access to this and see where you can put your capital, how you can get the most yield, farm the right tokens, and what to do in the restaking space. So make sure to check it out.
So with that, let's jump in and hear from Mike from EtherFi. GM, Mike, welcome to Milk Road Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Super excited to have you, my man. Excited, first of all, because restaking is just one of the biggest narratives in the crypto space right now. And we want to make sure that our listeners are up to speed and understanding it. But also, EtherFi, you guys have absolutely been crushing it. This year has just been a rocket ship for you guys. And so really excited to talk about everything you're building and your team and all the success you've had. Let's start with the most basic question I can ask, but maybe the most difficult question to answer, which is, what is restaking? Can you explain that in simple terms for everybody?
I'll do my best. I'll maybe explain it two ways. One, as technically what's how it works and what's happening. And then maybe I'll explain it by analogy to things that people might be familiar with. So the concept of staking is part of the Ethereum consensus mechanism. The basic idea there is that you take the Ethereum token, which is Ether, and you deposit it in a special contract on Ethereum, which then gives you the right to run a computer that processes transactions on the Ethereum network. It lets you be part of the Ethereum network. Why would you do this? Because you get a share of network rewards. So you put in, these days, there's a minimum number, 32 ETH, it's about $100,000. You put that into the special contract. In exchange, you run this computer, you're getting about a 3 or 4% rate of rewards on your $100,000, plus your ETH upside exposure. That's the basic idea of staking. The mechanism is that if you are running this computer and you screw up, you do something bad or malicious, your ETH gets slashed. So you're putting your ETH at stake in order to run part of the Ethereum network in exchange for network rewards. That's the whole Ethereum consensus mechanism, in contrast to, let's say, the Bitcoin consensus mechanism, which is lots of computers guessing random numbers really fast, which is a good mechanism, but less efficient. There's trade-offs there. Okay, so you say, okay, well, that's great. That makes sense. So what is this restaking thing? Well, when you stake your ETH, you're locking it and you can't do anything else with it. So if you think about the ETH staking reward rate as the risk-free rate, and it's pretty close to risk-free, relatively low risk, like a few basis points of risk. There's nothing inherently wrong with that, but it's like where T-bills aren't the only investment. Like, does it make sense to potentially reuse that ETH that you've staked, that $100,000, for other stuff? Well, what is that other stuff? Well, you could be using it in the same way that you secure Ethereum with that ETH. You could be using it to secure other networks, other blockchains, other services that are built that need to be actively validated. And that basically is restaking. It's sort of you're staking your ETH and then you're restaking it for purposes of securing other services in exchange for fees from those services. So then instead of getting 3 or 4% from just Ethereum, you're getting whatever, you know, the rate is. Maybe you're getting 10% in total, but you're taking more risk because you're putting your ETH at stake in multiple networks. You could sort of imagine it as like you've got a pool of capital, you've got, you know, $1 million, and you're kind of like lending it as collateral. That's really what you're doing. Let's say a company needs to take out a loan, or a bunch of companies need to take out a bunch of loans. You're lending them this collateral to take out this loan with the understanding that it's not likely that all of these companies that you're giving this collateral to are going to go bankrupt. So there's like an element of a corporate bond by analogy here. It's not quite a perfect analogy because this kind of thing doesn't really exist in TradFi, but it's maybe an imperfect analogy.
Very good explanation. I just want to clarify one thing. The lending example or analogy that you did, we're not really rehypothecating ETH in restaking. Is that correct?
You kind of are. Yeah, you are. You are. Yeah.
Can you explain, and I don't know if this is getting too technical, but this is the thing that people continue to ask, because there's a lot of people wondering about the risks of restaking, and are we setting up the system of Ethereum here for systemic risk of some sort?
And potentially, yeah.
So can you sort of walk us through that and talk about that a little bit?
So there's lots of, I mean, as with anything else, right, that you can imagine all kinds of disaster scenarios happening. It doesn't mean that one should always think about disaster, exclusively in disaster scenarios, right? Because it's, you can think about any new technology, right? Cars, like, what if everybody gets in an accident one day and dies? Like, okay, it doesn't mean you shouldn't have cars, right?
Right.
Because there's things that we can do about protecting people from that. Not to diminish it, but it's a little bit like that, where like people start catastrophizing right away about all the horrible things that could happen. And they could, but it doesn't mean that it will happen. And there's lots of people that are doing, you know, good work to prevent these disaster scenarios from happening. But there's a couple of sources of danger. One is the Ethereum consensus mechanism was very carefully designed to achieve a certain goal, which is to secure and run Ethereum. And we're kind of overloading that goal, because you've got like these validators now, they're supposed to be running Ethereum stuff, but now you're creating these incentives. Like, what if the other network that you're restaking on pays greater rewards than Ethereum, and the interests get conflicted somehow? Now, like, Ethereum could get degraded, the other network could run at the expense of Ethereum, potentially. Other cases would be if, like, you have, again, this is a wild scenario, you know, $50 billion of ETH gets staked in some specific restaking thing. And that restaking thing just has this catastrophic failure, and $50 billion of ETH just gets wiped out. It gets burned, gets sent to the 0x0 address. Like, yeah, that would be bad. That would be really bad. I think there's much more tangible risks that are actually much more real and sort of present, that are bigger risks than that type of thing happening. Like dominance of USDC and USDT, dominance of Lido. Like, these things are actually like much more like concrete, like, right there in your face. Not to say that we shouldn't seriously consider the restaking risks around that, but most of the arguments around the dangers of restaking that I've heard amount to arguments about anything that's too big to fail on Ethereum. Those are valid arguments, like, and things that are too big to fail are problematic. But again, there's lots of things that are actually too big to fail. Like Uniswap, very big. If it fails, are they going to have to roll back the network? Like, maybe. It's not like we should fixate on restaking it. In fact, restaking is much more hypothetical in that regard, right?
Right. Well, let me ask you this. You built a business off the back of this technology. So obviously, you don't think the risks are that big, or maybe you're just a very risky individual. I'm not sure. But what makes you so confident that, one, restaking is, I'm going to assume you believe it's the next big thing, or it is at least a big enough thing that you want to build a business on top of it. Mm-hmm. And so, one, what makes you confident that you think it's going to succeed? And then, two, what makes you so confident that it's not going to blow up or fail?
Well, the thing that makes us, maybe I can explain a little bit about EtherFi and what we do and what our goal is. But to answer your question, the answer is because it's to some degree, at least in our control, right? The risks that we take are in our control and control of the protocol through governance and the way it's designed. So while there may very well be blowups, in fact, there probably will be in the restaking kind of universe, we're going to work really hard to make sure we're not one of those by being much more risk conscious and careful. Okay, so what is EtherFi? Let me set a couple of contexts. Ultimate aim is to make DeFi accessible and easy to normal people. If you think about like, what is our mission? That's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to make crypto native life possible and easy for people. And so with that, we've got a roadmap of a trilogy of products that ultimately will make it possible for someone to save, invest, and spend their money all in a crypto native way that doesn't require them to, you know, on-ramp and off-ramp. They should be able to just live entirely in crypto without even having a bank account. That's the dream. That's what we're trying to get to. The first stage of that is what EtherFi has built is a staking protocol. And that staking protocol allows a user to deposit their ETH and mint a liquid staking and restaking token, which they can then go out and use in DeFi. And that has grown now to almost $4 billion. It's the largest restaking token out there. And then on the back of that, we've also launched a liquid vault, which is our second product. It's called EtherFi Liquid, which is think of it as like a robo-investor, a non-custodial DeFi strategy vault, so that a person can mint their EE, deposit it into Liquid, and have it automatically deployed to DeFi to harvest the best yields in a risk-managed way. And then the third product in that trilogy is EtherFi Cash, which will be the spending account.
Let's just chat a little bit about, you mentioned almost $4 billion in value locked. I think I was checking yesterday and you were at like 3.8 or 3.9. Yeah. Shout out to you and your team.
Whatever the price of ETH is that day.
And I just got to ask one quick question. How many people are on your team?
Yeah, we're really small. I think we're 11 people now. I mean, we're hiring. We're trying to hire as quickly as you can. But yeah, we're quite a small team.
Almost $4 billion and 11 people. That's just wild. Wow. Shout out to your team. That's just, yeah, incredible. Only in crypto. What are the other sort of high-level metrics that you guys are looking at to kind of give us an overview of EtherFi? How many users? Any other metrics that you guys consider on a regular basis or look at?
Yeah, so we've got, depending on exactly how you measure it, about 200,000 users, which is a pretty solid number. In crypto, I mean, that's about as, it's hard to get much higher than that. I don't know how many active real people there are in DeFi. It's probably like a million or two. So getting a few hundred thousand is about, I mean, that's as high as most protocols ever go, like some of the largest protocols. And, you know, we're growing by about, again, hard to tell exactly, but about 2,000 users per day. That's kind of the volume that we're at. Seeing, and then depending on the day, $30 to $100 million in deposits per day. Obviously, a lot of this is driven off the back of sort of points mania with Itemlayer and beyond. But yeah, seeing pretty good growth and traction there.
Have those growth numbers continued post airdrop? I know we're going to talk about season two later, so I don't want to quite dive into that yet. But just curious if those growth numbers sort of peaked post pre-airdrop and then tapered off, or if it's been
consistent? No, they've continued. We had about a 1 week flat period where I guess the sort of pure mercenary farmers rotated out. And this is actually an important thing I can talk about in terms of like risk and how people should think about different restaking protocols. But yeah, we had about, I think, 30 to 40,000 ETH, which is almost $200 million exit, so withdraw. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of flat where that was actually just balancing out new deposits. And we were flat for right about a week, and then it kind of rotated out, and we've been growing ever since. I think during the airdrop, we were at maybe 800K ETH. I may be wrong. I can actually just check. But now we're at 1.1 million ETH, so we've got, you know, at least 300,000 ETH since then. I can tell you right now, actually. Yeah, right around 800. We were on 800,000 ETH, and now we're at 1.1. So still, we've grown more than 30%, I guess, since
That's amazing. Yeah, clearly a combination of not just points mania, also some product market fit is clearly happening here. Let's talk about, there's a bunch of liquid restaking protocols. You're not the only one. What makes EtherFi different?
A lot of things. And obviously I'm biased, so just, you know, take everything I say with a grain of salt. I'm sure other people will tell you that their thing is the best.
But you're Canadian. But you're trustworthy. So that's
Sure. I know, I'm Taymanian. I'm in Tayman now. So there's a bunch of things. So we're the largest. I mean, that brings with it some advantages. One of the advantages around that is liquidity. So we've got the best liquidity depth. That you can trade it on decentralized exchanges. You can trade it on centralized exchanges, which we're the only liquid staking token with centralized exchange listings, which is a pretty big deal. Only Lido, which is a staking token, has that. So I think that's quite powerful. In addition to that, we've got the most DeFi integrations. So we've got close to 100 at this point, integrations with other protocols. So there's just a lot of stuff that you can do with the token. And in most, maybe even all of those integrations, we're the largest, sort of deepest liquidity pool. The most important thing, actually, is that if I had to pick one thing, is we have withdrawals. Like, that's a huge, huge thing. This is may blow people's mind, and usually it does when I say this. Like, we're actually the only restake token that has withdrawals enabled. You may ask that, like, what do you mean by that? Well, it means literally other restaking tokens you can deposit, you cannot withdraw. You have to swap it in the market, which it's like, okay, you've got $1 billion of tokens around there and maybe $20-30 million of liquidity. So yeah, if everything's perfect, great. Yeah, you'll be able to swap it out of the market. If like the slightest blip happens, then you're going to depeg 20%, and that's going to cause liquidation. And so if you're taking leverage on this thing, it's really dangerous. And so having withdrawals means that there's an army of market makers and traders that are standing by to arb the token if it ever goes below peg. Like when we had the whatever the number is, let's say 200 million in ETH exit during that in withdrawals during that period, like our token didn't depeg. Depeg maybe 25 basis points just because of the flows. If we didn't have withdrawals, we would have depegged by 10-15%. And there would have been tens, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars of liquidations that would have occurred. So there's a lot of protocols that are building good stuff, and I respect a lot of them. But like personally, I would never deposit into something that didn't have withdrawals. Like you kind of, that's a real crypto degen thing to do. Okay, so that's, you know, those are some other advantages. We've done the most audits. We're in the process of doing a formal verification audit. So we just, on a security standpoint, we're really good. Whatever. I mean, I could go on and on. Like there's lots of, from an ETH delegation standpoint, like in terms of actual, like what the whole point of restaking is, we've delegated the most ETH and the most AVS relationships. So those are all things that I think make Etherfi good.
Can we go back to your original thing where you said that you guys have control of the risks for restaking? And can you just walk through, you know, how that works? So EigenLayer is obviously the protocol that enables restaking, or one of them anyway. I think there's competitors that are probably coming. But how does this work in the sense that you guys, or not even you guys, I guess it's probably the DAO or the governance structure now, sort of controls that risking? Is it controls the capital? And then I want to get into this conversation around AVSs. You just brought that up. We'll explain what that is to listeners in a second. And kind of how those dynamics work with restaking. But let's just start here on the control side. I just want to get an idea of how that works.
So there's a number of decisions that a restaking protocol is making when it comes to restaking. With liquid staking like Lido or Rocket Pool or, I don't know, Stakewise, you're not making risk management decisions, I guess, except for maybe which node operators you use.
Yeah.
And obviously smart contract design. With restaking, so like one liquid staking token that's just vanilla and staking is, if you're comparing Lido and Rocket Pool, like, there's pros and cons, but like risk level is probably comparable between those two. With liquid restaking, there could be wild differences. You could have a liquid restaking token that is insanely risky and another one that is like basically, you know, the same level of risk as vanilla staking. And so the decisions that the liquid restaking protocols, I guess, are making is, which AVSs to actively validated services, which restaking services to delegate to. So in the analogy of like you're providing collateral to a bunch of companies to, you know, take out loans, which companies do you provide that collateral to? How much collateral do you provide? So which AVSs and how much ETH are you giving them? And then what is the overlap? Like, are you using the same bucket of ETH that just secures everything, that serves as collateral for everything? Or are you doing some attributable pieces that are like, okay, this collateral is just for this company and nobody else, which is less risky than this collateral is providing security to, you know, 10 different AVSs. So those are the decisions that are being made. In the initial stages, there is no slashing implemented yet. And so for probably a few months, there's not going to be slashing possible. So there really isn't a lot of risk management to do. It's because, again, there's no slashing. So there's not much, many decisions to be made. But once slashing is implemented, our approach is going to be to work very closely with a number of third-party entities that are sort of contracted by the foundation to do risk assessments on every AVS that we would work with, and only whitelist and work with ones that we the cross a bar. I mean, all the ones that launched recently with Eigenlayer, I think, certainly meet that bar. But I think eventually there's going to be a big spectrum of like sketchy versus well-designed ones.
Right.
So we plan to only whitelist the ones that are high quality. And then second of all, we plan to only not to sort of rehypothecate, you know, as aggressively as one might otherwise. We don't plan to be the highest yield liquid restaking right. protocol. We plan to be the safest. And so, I mean, there probably will be, you know, super degen protocols out there that make different choices.
Let's sort of connect the dots for the listeners. So restaking is basically you're taking your staked ETH, you're restaking it, and now you're extending the security of that ETH to go and use it for other applications, which you're calling, which are called AVSs, right? And so you can take your pool of ETH and you can start to provide security for, I don't know, rollups or other blockchains or oracles or other applications that also need security that don't want to bootstrap their own security. They want to instead pay for restaking instead. And so what you're saying is basically those AVSs are going to pay the restaking protocols for their security. And I guess the more that these restaking protocols use that capital or rehypothecate that capital, the more yield they can get. So the more aggressive they get, the more yield that can be exactly. earned through the restaking.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Interesting. I did not realize actually that that's how it was set up. And so it's up to the discretion of the protocols to decide on how risky they want to be.
Exactly. Yeah. So you could have 500 layers or one layer and a little slices for everybody or like one big pool for everybody. Those are all choices that are being made.
Interesting. Do you have any idea what, so right now you can't see what the APY is for your restaking portion of your
There's no ETH.
There's no APY. Do we know what those estimates are or do you have any sort of idea?
If I had to guess, it'll probably be around 5% across everything. That's a complete guess, not a forecast on top of the staking yield.
Wow. Whoa.
That's a complete guess. Don't me on that at all. But the points stuff has been much more lucrative. But the restaking yield, I think, will probably be in that range. That's my guess.
Wow, that's incredible. So now you have staked ETH bringing you, 3 to 4%. And then you have the restake somewhere in the ballpark of 5%.
Let's make it a range like 2 to 6%. Let's say that. That's probably a plausible rate.
Interesting.
I don't want to hear quoting memes like, you said it was 5%. Thanks,
buddy. Yeah, no worries. That's interesting. I mean, from what we've seen, it's always been zero. And I was like, what is this going to be? Is this going to be massive? Is it not? Like, I wasn't really sure. And obviously, that'll depend on how much traction we get from restaking, right? Is there a lot of AVSs right. or not? Do you have any idea?
Ultimately, initially, it's token, emissions. That's all it's going to be, right? Because these AVSs don't have customers
right.
yet.
Right.
So there's no economic activity right now. So it's just token emissions. And obviously, that's very speculative. At some point, the bridges and the oracles and the cross-chain things and the ZK coprocessors, they're going to have customers, and those customers are going to pay money, and that money is going to eventually flow back to restakers.
Interesting. I know it's still early days on restaking, but I want to sort of get a lay of the land here of, I guess, sort of the ecosystem and the competition. So you have a bunch of liquid restaking protocols, as we've already sort of touched on, EtherFi being the biggest, largest, and the most safest so far, as from what you're telling us. And then you also have the liquid staking protocols, right? You've already mentioned a bunch of those, Lido, Rockapool, et cetera. I'm curious where you think this whole ecosystem goes. Does everyone just move to liquid restaking
yeah.
tokens? And you think that's how it's going to be?
Restaking is just going to be table stakes. Asymptotically, Ethereum staking yield is going to come down to, I actually think it comes down to maybe below zero. With the most recent proposal, I forget which one it was, where like the yield curve could actually go below zero if there's too much ETH staked. If restaking yields are sufficiently high, staking yield could be below zero, but it's still worth it because you can restake. So I actually think it may have the exact opposite intended effect. Well, I guess it still sort of reduces the yield or the amount of ETH staked, but I don't think it'll have this like dramatic effect that like less ETH ends up getting staked. I think staking yield could go to below zero and people will still ape in.
So right now, 26% of ETH is staked, 3% is restaked. Project that out for us. What do you think those numbers look like in 1-5?
Well, it depends exactly where this proposal ends up. But whatever the yields end up, or sorry, whatever the amount of staked ETH, whether it's 20% or 50% or anything in between, most of the yield is going to come from restaking. And therefore, I think restaking is just going to be table stakes.
Right.
Because like, why would you hold a token that pays you either zero or negative yield or 1%? Why would you hold that if like relatively safely, and I think it will be relatively safe, and you can earn 3%, 4%, 5%, whatever, you're just going to hold that token. And again, over time, this will be more battle tested and proven, and it'll just become table stakes. Yeah, I mean, again, I do think this proposal probably will go through. I think staking yield probably goes to zero or negative, and just most of the yield just comes from restaking.
Very interesting.
It's probably good for Ethereum, right?
I mean, it's definitely a good thing that restaking came about, because if not, and staking yield goes to zero, well then...
Because they're like seeing all like everybody's just dumping all their ETH, and that actually, I mean, we can get really technical. So too many validators are problematic because it makes it difficult for the network to reach consensus. So there's this other proposal called MaxEB, which increases the amount of ETH that you could put in a validator. So it's not fixed at 32. But that should relieve a lot of pressure from the network, actually. So there'll be much fewer validators, with some of which just having more ETH. That addresses a lot of the problem. So there's a couple of these like different solutions.
So the idea is you want more ETH staked, but less validators running that stake, because then it just complicates.
Well, there's issues. Some people would argue that too much ETH stake is problematic. You don't want like all your ETH stake. Some people would argue that it's, I disagree with this, but like one might argue, well, like you really should just have the minimum amount. Why have a ton of ETH stake? You should, if like 10% of ETH stake is sufficient to provide security to the network, anything beyond that is just kind of a waste. You know, you want that ETH out there doing stuff. I would disagree with that, but that's one argument for why one might not want to have a ton of stake.
Interesting. Let's jump out of the weeds here on that note. Though I do have one question. So if you believe that we're going to basically move away from any liquid staking tokens, and we'll, in the future, we'll go all liquid restaking tokens.
Well, it's a superset. To be clear, like liquid restaking in a certain condition where you're not securing any AVS is liquid staking. So it's liquid restaking is a superset. It's more just like everything moves to the superset, I think, by default.
Right. Makes sense. So what do you think happens with Lido, Rocket Blue, et cetera, who are currently just liquid staking tokens? Do you think they start to run their own restaking, or how does that play out?
I think so. I think they're going to have to. There's already a way for people to participate by just wrapping and... It's a bit of a misnomer, but like restaking the liquid staking tokens. You can already take our ETH and SC ETH and put it into EigenLayer to restake it. And then you could just wrap that into a receipt token. I think, you know, EigenPi is the largest one of those, I think. So that's already possible. That may very well be the way that people participate. And so like all our ETH and SC ETH and others are wrapped up in these liquid, you know, restaking tokens.
Right. Okay. Talking about restaking is always so weird, because you're like staking tokens and then restaking tokens. And like, we're writing a pro report on it. And just like the amount of times I've said these words, I'm just like, this is getting out of hand.
Try to explain to a non-crypto person what you do when you're
going to say, remember at the beginning of the episode when you said your overall mission was to make restaking available to the normal person. And here we are, and it's like completely inaccessible.
Does a person that's getting a 3%, you know, interest rate on their checking account need to know about the repo market?
Right.
No, they shouldn't care about that. They shouldn't care about bond yield curves and whatever. They're just, I got money in my checking account. It's giving me my interest. That's it. That's all I care. That's the level I think that a normal person should have to care about. They shouldn't have to mint a token and then put it into Pendo and, you know, make a decision about YT versus PT. Like, that's not a normal human
thing. And this is your goal with Etherfi, right? Like in having the liquid restaking token, liquid, and then cash, which is the third part of the three different services that you offer, is basically the ability for someone to hold all of this in their wallet and then be able to spend it. But I'm assuming the future vision for you guys is like they don't need to go and think about all these different tokens and stuff.
Yeah.
Just have an Etherfi
deposit
a bank account. Yeah.
Deposit ETH, deposit stables, deploy it through automated, non-custodial, fully transparent vaults. So you can think of these as like, this is an analogy, analogous to ETFs, but some shitty banker can't take all your money. In the sense that it's self-custodial, you're still holding custody of your assets, It's fully transparent. You know exactly what's happening with them, and it's automatic or managed through a governance process. That's what we're trying to get to. There's like all this like hype and excitement about like Bitcoin ETF, ETH ETF, and I get it. Obviously, these are like great ways to sort of bridge the two worlds. But I think we're actually not even that far from a world. Maybe it's 5 years. You know, maybe it's 3 years where the default is going to be crypto. You're not going to launch funds like launching a fund on like the, you know, NYSE or NASDAQ or whatever, or you know, I'm going public. It would just be weird. It'll be like buying a fax machine. It'll be like, what do you like? All the liquidity, everything's in crypto. Like, what are you even talking about? So, eventually, this stuff replaces ETFs and funds. I mean, these are the proto versions of these things. And so, I think right now everyone's excited about all these inflows. I'm looking at it's going to be the inverse. Like, there's going to be funds and entities launching crypto native on, you know, decentralized exchanges. And people will be excited when people bridge that to TradFi because the flows will go in the other direction because most of the liquidity will be in crypto.
Agreed. Let's talk about the business model side of this. When I think Lido, Rocket Pool, the way that they, or their DAOs anyway, make money is, you know, Lido takes 10% of the yield that it's getting from stake. Rocket Pool takes 15%. Yeah. Coinbase takes, I think, 25%. And so there's sort of probably a race to the bottom there on that, although they've stuck with that. How does it work on the liquid restaking side? Is it the same thing? Are you guys just going to take a certain percent of the yield, or is there a different
That's right. Plan? There's a lot more complexity here because running multiple ADSs is more expensive. As a node operator, it's just more, it costs more money to run all these things. The basic idea is the same, that there's these ADSs are providing rewards for running, for validating their services. Those rewards, a portion of them goes to the node operator, a portion will go to Eigenlayer, a portion will go to the EtherFi protocol, and then the vast majority should go to the staker. I don't know if it's 5, 5, and 5, and 15, 85 goes to the restaker or what, but it'll be that order of magnitude. You know, I don't think there's a lot of folks that we've spoken to that are arguing for a much larger rev share. I think there's a reason I think things have settled on 10% for staking. And one, it's because if you try to do more, it becomes overly punitive and you just don't have a lot of customers eventually. And then it also has to be somewhat correlated to like the cost structure of running validators. And so if you're, you know, if you're charging 1%, you don't have enough money to run the validator. You don't have to run enough money to run the servers. If you're charging 20%, unless you've got almost a captive audience like Coinbase, it's too punitive. So there's going to be a balance there. If I had to guess, I think it'll be of that order of magnitude where it'll be 85-15 or maybe 80-20. Between restakers and the various service providers.
So you guys don't even have a plan yet for, like, you don't have an exact strategy yet of what you're going to charge.
Nobody knows, because nobody knows what this stuff's going to cost. The fee module hasn't been built yet. Yeah, nobody knows yet.
That's so funny. This space moves so fast. It's so wild.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, Eigenlayer got 10 billion in TVL or 14 billion in TVL before a single ETH was restaked, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're very much kind of gets ahead of itself.
Actually, that's a great point. I got a question. Did you expect it to grow that fast? Like, I don't know when you guys started building EtherFi. I'm curious to know that. And then, like, did you expect this to happen this way?
Yeah, just over a year ago, I guess, is when we started. And no, nobody expected anything. I mean, over a year ago when we were staking was a couple of, you know, lectures on YouTube by this professor named Sriram. Like, that was restaking. I didn't even know if the word had, like, become commonplace yet.
Right.
We started as a fund that was doing staking. My previous company was a tech company. Then we started a fund and we were doing staking. And so when I was looking at that, it became, to me at least, it became really clear that restaking was going to be the table stakes and is going to become the default for staking. There was an opportunity to build the next generation staking product. And so we made a very big bet. I mean, we took this huge gamble, which a lot of some investors bought into, most didn't. That this was going to be the thing. And that bet turned out to be so much more, maybe it's incorrect to say that the bet was right, because we certainly didn't predict that like there would be this insane speculative frenzy around restaking and all this mania. The bet was that restaking was going to be legit and create a lot of value. What we didn't expect was the speculative mania around it. And so, yeah, it shocked. I think everybody, it shocked Eigenlayer, it shocked. Yeah, like it was a real surprise, I think, to everybody involved.
Interesting. Pretty nice surprise, though, that's for sure. It's nice to step into a business where, or maybe not, actually.
To some degree, but I would say it may turn out to be more of a problem than actually a benefit. Because if a market gets so far ahead of itself, in fact, that it will be, it is a problem more than a benefit. When the market gets so far ahead of itself, how long is it going to take before there's enough like services that actually create enough value that like can sustain all this? Because you've got, you know, whatever it is, 13 billion in ETH that it needs to be serviced, right? In a sense, it's kind of a debt. And so how long until the thing gets big enough to actually be able to service $13 billion in ETH? Like a couple of years, I think. And so there's going to be this, there's a lot of challenges associated with that everybody is working on. I think it's a little bit like, you know, the Wile E. Coyote, like run off a cliff, but like you don't really know that you're about to fall yet. And maybe if you keep running fast enough, you can make it to the other side. That's a little bit how it feels.
This, I mean, Aguilera has basically gone from below 1 billion at the beginning of January to almost 15 billion at the end of March, early April. I think that's the fastest growing crypto protocol in history in terms of TVL. I don't know of anything. I was trying to think of this. I actually tweeted this out yesterday. No one had any other.
Probably right. Yeah.
I think it's the fastest growing.
Lido grew pretty fast, but I don't think it was that fast.
Not as fast. No, this is almost double as fast as Lido. We actually, there's a chart that's percolating around Twitter right now, and it's just comparing Aguilera to Lido, and Lido's double as fast. So it's pretty wild. But I guess to your point of what you said of like, well, we don't have enough AVSs in revenue to actually support all this ETH yet, that 5% you're saying is, or the range you gave, is a future thing that's going to be years out before we reach that? Or is there enough incentives in the meantime?
Like so many things, it depends on the, you know, the Fed money printer. A lot of this is speculative, right? So all these AVSs are going to be issuing tokens, and those tokens are going to be emissions. But like there needs to be enough speculative demand for these things for the emissions to be worth anything. And so that's where the 5%, and that's a completely made up number. Not completely made up. That is a very, very imprecise number. So that's where it's going to come from. It's going to come from various token emissions from speculation around those tokens.
Can you just share a little bit, like, who are these AVSs? And maybe help the listener also understand, like, what is the problem that Aguilera and restaking is solving for these AVSs?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are lots of problems that it solves. I'll name a couple. So one is it allows somebody to bootstrap a network or a service more efficiently. So normally if somebody is spinning up a new blockchain, like, I don't know, Kusama or whatever, they're trying to spin up a blockchain, they need to do a lot of emissions, token emissions, to get people to like provide security to that chain. So they launch this whatever Kusama token, you got to do 30% annualized emissions to just get like people to use this token and stake it, and you're trying to bootstrap this network, and you end up, you know, creating a ton of dilution and on this token. That's problematic, right? That was the only way to do it. Now you can launch a network and provide, you know, maybe 1% emissions of your token or something on that order. And for that 1%, you're borrowing the security of this like super stable in crypto land, super stable rock solid asset like Ether. So instead of like bootstrapping your network, you're just paying like a little toll to borrow the Ethereum security. So the net effect is when you're bootstrapping network, you have to do less emissions, you have to do less dilution to bootstrap it because you're borrowing security of a more established network. That's the value proposition of restaking an Aguilera, is that you can bootstrap your network more efficiently. There's other benefits around more tighter coupling and alignment to Ethereum. Like if you have, for example, an Oracle network that is sort of powered or secured by restaking, it actually allows your Oracle network to potentially be much more efficient from both a gas standpoint, and you're not having to create a whole other network of nodes. You're just reusing the same existing Ethereum infrastructure, and something like an Oracle network is actually quite foundational to a blockchain. So there's lots, I mean, I can go on, but there are lots of benefits that come out of restaking naturally and building services via restake. It opens up a pretty broad design space.
Right.
Examples, there are lots of examples. Omni is an interop cross-chain solution. It's like its own network, but it's used to provide cross-chain communications across different layer twos and other chains. So Omni was the first deal that we struck with them. as EtherFi to provide, I think it was $600 million in ETH security. So that's one example. Another example is Lagrange, which is a ZK. Actually, I think they launched with state committees. I'm not even trying to explain that. But their next product is ZK Coprocessor, which lets you provably aggregate and compute across data on the blockchain, where previously you'd have had to do a bunch of like off-chain computation. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's the basic idea of it. There's AltLayer, which is, there's a whole bunch of these things. I could go into the weeds about each one.
And is this, you said that you guys struck a deal with them. Is AltLayer the ones that are bringing in the AVSs, or is it on the restaking protocol themselves?
The way to think about it is AltLayer is Amazon, or the Amazon marketplace. We are a seller on Amazon. Omni is a buyer. So we're selling ETH security. Omni is buying ETH security, and AltLayer is the infrastructure and
is the connector. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Very interesting. We'll get to the token and the points programs and stuff in just a second. I just have one more question, Jay. I'm not sure if you have more to ask as well. On the note of restaking, there's another protocol that just recently launched. I think it's called Carrick or Karak or something like that, which is now taking restaking outside of just ETH. And you can restake, I don't know, I think like stable coins and probably other tokens. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this? And is this a thing, like is restaking meant to be just for ETH, or is this going to proliferate to millions of tokens?
Just if you think about the name, it's restaking. USDC is not staked, so you're not restaking. Yeah. You're providing slashable security, which is very closely related, obviously, because like that's a big part of restaking is you're providing ETH as slashable security, but it's not restaking. So maybe that's pedantic because it's not like, who cares about what it's called? You don't want to associate it with something that's perceived as safe, like staking, and like you're taking your dollars and using them as slashable security, and like you're using this word that's perceived as safe. It just doesn't, it kind of doesn't sound right. But aside from that, yes, they are providing a protocol for providing slashable security to other services. To be perfectly honest, I don't know a ton about it, but yes, they are. I mean, I think they would position themselves as an EigenLayer competitor.
Interesting. Jay, any more questions at your end, or should we get into the...
Let's shift gears to the token. You guys launched your token on March 18th, I believe. And so we're just under a month here. We're recording a bit before this episode comes out. By the time this comes out, we'll be at about a month of the token. What's the purpose of the token within your ecosystem? How will it be used? Give us an overview.
Yeah, so it's the network token that, I guess, controls the protocol. So it is the protocol that is the token that is used for voting to pass proposals from the foundation, which then, you know, contracts out the labs company to build and implement those proposals. So voting is one source of utility for the token. The other, we have a proposal that's going to be live on this soon. And this proposal is a buy and lock mechanism where a portion of protocol revenue goes to purchasing the token on the open market automatically and locking it, you know, in the foundation for some period of time. So that effectively creates a value accrual mechanism for the token. And then in addition to that, there is a role for node operators and staking of the token, but that hasn't been flushed out yet.
On the voting side, I mean, obviously it's for upgrades of the protocol and stuff, but is this also for the risk appetite and the AVSs that you're going to be?
Yeah. Eventually it will play a role. I think probably whitelisting will require a vote. Whitelisting and AVS will require a vote. Probably some risk parameters will be set using the token. I'll just leave it at that for now.
Okay. And you mentioned the value accrual, which we already talked about how sort of the revenues are made from EtherFi. In this instance, it'll take some sort of cut from that. We didn't really touch on, what about the other products you have of Liquid and Cash? Mm-hmm. Is there other revenue sources coming from that, and will
also play
in the ecosystem there too, or how will that work?
Yeah, about half of our revenue. So Liquid is now the largest DeFi strategy protocol. I mean, it's all part of one thing. So it's kind of with EtherFi right now, you're getting kind of two things. You're getting the largest Liquid restaking protocol and the largest DeFi strategy protocol, and soon the largest payment network, and all really nicely integrated with each other. It's kind of a first in DeFi. We've got this like clean, fully integrated suite rather than like these very narrow kind of point solutions, which people have gotten accustomed to, I guess, in DeFi. So EtherFi Stake is the staking product. EtherFi Liquid is the automated DeFi strategy vault. EtherFi Cash is the spending product that's upcoming. And each of those has its own protocol revenue streams, which then, you know, feeds back in value accrual back to the token. And yeah, as I mentioned, so Liquid is actually driving about half of protocol revenue right now, even though it's maybe 15% of the size in terms of TVL as the state product.
Interesting. And it only launched like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah, I guess about less than a month ago, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. And what's the timelines around the cash product?
Mid-June is what we're aiming for first launch. Yeah.
For 11 people, you guys are just pumping things out.
We're hiring. We need to hire a lot of folks. Yeah. If you want to come work at Etherfi, come check us out. We're looking for lots of devs and folks.
Cool. Let's talk about this points program. I followed you guys from the early, early days of when you started this, and you guys knocked it out of the park. Points programs are obviously like somewhat new, but very, very popular over the last, like, really since probably Blast, I think, started it, and then Frontech.
Well, Blur, I think it was Blur,
right?
It was actually,
Blur.
I don't even know if I want to take credit for this, but right around the same time, Blur and us launched points programs. We had no idea I was in an NFT. Sure. I didn't know they existed. But like, I guess simultaneously, we invented this goofy thing.
Wait, when did you originally launch your points program?
February of 2022.
22,
right?
Whoa. Really?
No, 23. Yeah.
February 23. Yeah, yeah. Wow. Okay. That was earlier than I got onto. I didn't realize it was that long. The last, like, from Q4 of 2023 and this last quarter, though, you guys, I thought, really put in a good marketing strategy. You guys had different, like, weeks where you would do certain events. You
got
Vampire Attack. Yeah. But they worked really, really well, I think, right? Like,
yeah.
Talk a little bit about your guys' strategy with this points program, like why you guys are doing it, how it's working. Like, just, I don't know, help us wrap
up. Yeah, I mean, look, again, I don't know that I want to take credit for this, but look, we did come up with a lot of this stuff that's now become sort of standard. And it was just, I don't know, just coming up with stuff and experimenting with a lot of stuff worked, a lot of stuff didn't work. I was just sort of playing games. I don't even know why I don't want to take credit for this because it really like people went too crazy with it. But like we did the thing where we took the eigenlayers points and just passed it on to our users. Mm-hmm. That turned out to be like gasoline on more like napalm on the fire because it just went, I mean, that went absolutely insane. And then obviously lots of folks are doing that now. Yeah, I mean, look, we just ran a bunch of experiments and we did hundreds of experiments and probably most of them failed, but like a few of them really worked. Mega Week was a big one and that was massive. And then Final Countdown was a massive one. We had almost 300K, more than 300K ETH staked as part of like the Final Countdown promotion. We're running one now called Staking Friends. And it's funny how the bar has changed. It's maybe about 70K ETH so far. And we're kind of like, yeah, it's okay.
That is.
It needs to be more.
Okay, so season one ended a couple weeks ago. Now we're on to season two, which I think is about 10 weeks long or something. I think it finishes up in June.
No, more than that. It's until June 30th. So it's 14 weeks. It ended up
14 weeks. Okay, cool. One of the questions that Jay and I have talked about a couple times is like, how do you wean your users off of points? We're all addicted to points in crypto. And I mean, it works really, really well. Like it obviously brings in a lot of users, it brings in a lot of capital, which allows you to basically bootstrap your business. And obviously Eigenlayer and a bunch of these liquid restaking protocols have done really well from that.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, the season one is over and you had a bunch of outflows. Now you guys had season two. And so the capital came back in.
Yeah.
When does this end or how does this end? Like how does it work?
We're not going to be able to do a season three because it's just, we're too large, basically. Like we need to like emit all of our tokens.
Right.
Actually have a real return. Yeah. I mean, I guess we bootstrapped this network. The token is embedded in all kinds of things now. And I think the seasons are going to start winding up kind of across the universe. And so everyone's kind of going to have to shift back into more steady state mode. That doesn't mean we're not going to be doing token emissions. We will be, and incentives and grants and all that. But this sort of like fire hose of points is definitely going to have to end because there's just not enough to sort of go around.
What would be the end result of that? Do you feel strongly in that it won't have a big impact, or will it lead you guys to be in a position where all of a sudden a whole bunch of people are pulling out?
I'm sure there's going to be lots of people but like it's physically impossible for everybody or anybody to just keep emitting points forever. So at some point, it's like, okay, you're going to pull out, but then do what? You're going to go back to Lido? Like, and then there's going to be restaking rewards and all kinds of other reasons to stick around. So it just becomes more of like a standard. You bootstrap a standard where you're going to have your long ETH exposure through these restaking tokens. And then, of course, you know, different people have done different strategies, right? Swell is doing their layer two, for example. And so that is sort of like they bootstrap this network and they're using it to launch a layer two, and that's going to create an ecosystem around it. So that creates some value and stickiness. Our strategy is we're launching this suite of vertically integrated products. And so if somebody is using us for staking for liquid and they've got their credit card that they're using day to day, it kind of just makes sense to stay in the ecosystem, right? And in fact, with Liquid, I mean, we're going to be accepting a variety of tokens. I guess we're probably going to announce it before this airs. But yeah, we're going to be accepting, for example, Swell's, you know, restaking token into Liquid because it's actually not competitive. We want to have a broad array of strategies that people can use. So our approach is vertical integration. And what does that mean? We're providing more value to the user. We're creating a product that's just like really easy to use and lets the user participate in DeFi without being a, you know, finance nerd. So that's valuable, and I think that'll have some staying power.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about finding product market fit, right? Which is like a lesson for a lot of people in crypto. If you're investing in companies, is like, are they just have a bunch of users and capital because they were giving incentives, or do they actually have product market fit?
Well, of course that's why. I mean, that's exactly, that is the reason that people win, because of the point systems and games and all the, you know, the speculative stuff. That's exactly why they went in. But that may be why you enter, but it doesn't mean you're going to exit immediately.
Right, for sure.
And so that's true of any ecosystem bootstrapping project.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah. You brought up Swell's L2, which is quite interesting. So for those that aren't aware, Swell's launching L2, where a bunch of liquid restaking tokens are now on. It's kind of like the staking L2. And I'm curious, with the setup that you guys have of your three products, you're going from staking a token and earning yield on that to then paying with a credit card. I imagine this can't exist on Ethereum L1. This is going to have to move to an L2 as well. Will you guys launch your own L2? Will you just use something like Swell's? Or how is this going to work?
We're open to both options. And you can't launch a payment system on Ethereum L1, obviously. Right. Pay $12 for, you know, gas fees for a coffee. So for sure, we need, you know, we're going to look at a variety of alternatives. We're looking at Gnosis Pay as one foundational thing as well. I'm sure could be an option. I mean, there could be multiple networks that we do it across. There's a chance we build our own. I don't know. I mean, I've always kind of shied away from things that were very kind of grifty. It's very easy to just be launch an L2 or an L1 just for the sake of it, because, you know, that's that will create a lot of like speculative buying around it. We'll do what makes sense for the user. Like for us, the customer is what actually matters. If it makes most sense for us to use another product, that's probably what we'll do. And that's the most likely outcome, because there are a million L2s. Lots of things could be used to achieve what we need.
You said this product's going live in June, right?
I mean, it's not going to be like a full-fledged universe in June. Like it'll be, aspects of it are going to be live in June. We'll probably have like a landing page and some explanation of how it's all going to work in the next couple weeks, actually. But the actual, like, click a button, order your card, and download your app, this is going to be around mid to late June.
So things are moving real quick for you guys. Like, you're not even quite sure what chain is going to be on, if you have your own chain.
And we're evaluating about some new options.
Yeah.
There's zero chance we're going to build our own chain by June. Like, okay. That is 100%.
Yeah. It's just interesting how far this ecosystem's come. Like, I don't know, like a year ago, you would have had to plan this out so far in advance. And now it's just so easy to either. I mean, you probably could spin up your own chain.
Yeah, like true. Yeah, you could spin up an Optimism stack in like 5 seconds.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of infrastructure has been built that makes things that in TradFi are just impossible or would take a decade. Now you could do it in DeFi in days or weeks. And that's the magic of this ecosystem. What needs to happen though is like real economic activity has to like start getting kind of mounted on this system. In the end, like it can't just be a giant casino forever, right? Everyone can, but to me, that's a lot less
interesting. I was gonna say, hopefully that's not what it is. Jay, I'm not sure if you have any other questions. Mike, is there anything that we've missed that you think we need to touch on when it comes to EtherFi or restaking, EigenLayer, et cetera, the whole thing? Anything that we haven't really touched on yet?
I think we covered a lot. I mean, I'll just say, you know, EtherFi is going to be your place to save, invest, and spend your crypto. In the meantime, go to Ether.fi, take some ETH, deploy it into Liquid, and just play around. That's probably the best thing that anyone can do. Just stay posted on how the stuff works.
Mike, where can people follow you or anybody listening that's interested in joining your 11-man team that is lifting a heavy lift right now? Where can they learn more about your jobs?
Yeah, go to Ether.fi. I think we've got a jobs board there. And in terms of following us, you can follow Ether_fi on X. Yeah, those are probably your best channels. Join our Discord server.
Amazing. Mike, just an incredible conversation. Thank you for taking very complex topics and doing your best to simplify them for our listeners and for everybody out there. There's a great opportunity right now and a great opportunity ahead to understand and get involved in providing the security for Ethereum and for all these AVSs. So excited for everything you guys are building. A deep bow. Please go high five all 11 guys on your team. Guys and girls, I don't know, because it's just insane the speed at which you guys are moving is truly incredible. Only in crypto does innovation happen that fast. So thank you and respect for everything you guys are doing. Awesome.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks so much for listening in, everybody. Have an awesome day. Thank you for listening to Milk Road Radio, the easiest path to get smarter about crypto. If you like this episode, share it and hit subscribe or follow so you don't miss out on the next one. There's also a link in the description to our free 5-minute daily newsletter where we simplify crypto for you while making you laugh. And if you're willing to step up your crypto investing game, then we'll leave a link to Milk Road Pro as well, your number one resource to help you invest successfully in crypto. One final note, this podcast is for educational purposes only, and nothing we say is financial advice. Crypto is risky, so you should never invest more than you're willing to lose. Thank you, friends, and we'll see you in the next one.